From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Are We Alone? Make sure you're part of that. Well, you know, we care about you on this program a lot. So we'll give you stories that entertain you, stories about your health, but we also talk about stories that could hurt you. A yellowfin tuna product used to make dishes like sushi and sashimi, sold at restaurants and grocery stores, has been linked with an outbreak of salmonella that has sickened now more than 100 people in 20 states and the District of Columbia. The Food and Drug Administration said that 116 illnesses have been reported already, including 12 people who have been hospitalized. No deaths reported yet. Moon Marine Company of California voluntarily now recalling 58,000 pounds of frozen raw yellowfin tuna. The product is not available for sale to you individually, but may have been used to make sushi and sashimi and similar dishes available in restaurants and grocery stores. Many of the people who became ill reported eating the raw tuna in sushi as spicy tuna, according to the FDA. Food expert Steve Schenck with us, and I brought Steve in for a few minutes just to ask him about these stories. Steve, it seems like every day we're getting some kind of story about salmonella breaking out. What's going on with our food processing in this country?
Well, the problem, George, is that we really are in the age of contamination, and where it comes from is the fact that the factory farms and the huge processors, particularly of scrap material, and I guess you could consider the pink slime outbreak that we were dealing with before in our conversations, are similar to that. This is the scrapings from bones of the tuna. It's not waste product, but anymore what's happening is when you have these huge factory farms and these huge processing plants, it's very difficult for them to maintain the cleanliness level because they are processing so much product. And so what we're having is a continuation. And this year has been just absolutely horrendous, George, with the factory farms and the outbreaks of Salmonella, E. coli, and these deadly bacteria.
So what are people to do, Steve? I mean, here, let's a family goes to a nice restaurant, they sit down, they order sushi, they all end up getting sick. Is there anything we can do about this?
Unfortunately, your folks aren't going to want to hear this, George, but very simply, raw protein of any sort. Right now, with the processing and the difficulties that we're having with the tremendous contamination countrywide, is not a wise choice. I know that a lot of sushi is eaten raw, and back when they were small processors and they would go out and they'd buy the tuna and bring it in and cut it themselves, it could be safe. But right now, particularly when they're using scrap products to take advantage of the entire critter, you're going to have difficulties. And the first thing I would say is avoid raw. Unfortunately, that's what sushi is a lot. And the other thing is one of the things that people need to be aware of is foods that are lower in moisture have a tendency not to be able to carry these bacteria and things. So cook the food well, whether you're doing it yourself or whether it's in a restaurant. I'm sorry, but that's what's going to have to happen in order for people to protect themselves.
Thank you, Steve. I agree with you wholeheartedly there. People underestimate the amount of sugar in drinks, which are perceived to be healthy, according to research. The Glasgow University study asked more than 2,000 people in the United Kingdom to estimate just how much sugar was in a range of drinks. While many overestimated the amount in beverages, they underestimated levels in smoothies and fruit juices. The research also found that soft drinks could be accounting for a large chunk of their recommended calorie intake. New research showing that fluoride chemicals added to U.S. public water supplies are not reducing tooth decay as promoted and promised by government agencies, according to a report from the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation. Using federal statistics, the West Virginia University Rural Health Research Center reports that urban children in the United States with more exposure to fluoridated water and dental care have just as many cavities as less fluoridation exposed rural children. In a moment, we're going to be talking about fluoride in your water, and later we'll take your calls about this story. Road pollution is more than twice as deadly as traffic accidents, according to a study out there in the United Kingdom. It affects us all. This was a study now from MIT experts in Massachusetts of folks in the United Kingdom. They estimate that the combustion exhausts across the UK cause nearly 5,000 premature deaths each year. A NASA satellite has captured spectacular images of a video of a massive solar flare erupting from the eastern side of the sun. The medium intensity class solar eruption produced a coronal mass ejection, but it's not going to do much damage to good old planet Earth. But the number of earthquakes in the central United States rose spectacularly near where oil and gas drillers disposed of wastewater underground, a process called fracking that may have caused faults to slip, according to U.S. government geologists. Let's bring in Earth Changes expert Mitch Batchris to get his take on this story. Mitch, I have always suspected that this might be the cause of some of these earthquakes. What do you think of this?
Well, that's exactly what's happening. I've written quite a bit about it, and my good friend Jim Berkland, we've both been studying this. Both Jim and I, we call it fluid displacement. It can be any type of fluid. Just as you described, it can be salt water, and of course it can be oil. It could be any type of fluid, including high tides. Now, a fluid displacement can be the addition of fluid. It can also be the subtraction of fluid. Either way is what causes displacement of tectonic plates. Anything that may be vulnerable to tectonic shifts, that's what's occurring. That is why what happened in Indonesia, Sumatra, and then, of course, all the way around the Ring of Fire, we saw things popping up in Oklahoma and Texas, where this drilling is occurring, and Utah. I believe that that's probably the correlation specifically to Oklahoma. There's no other reason. The other ones do have magma channels where the earthquakes were taking place, especially on the West Coast. They now know that there are magma tunnels, if you will, that go from the West Coast, especially the Cascadia Range, that go all the way, that hook up in through Utah and to Yellowstone. Something to keep your eye on.
You got it, Mitch. Thanks so much. Mitch's website, earthchangesmedia.com. Now, three people walk into a bar. Now, this is not a joke. One's got an iPhone, the other's got an Android, and the guy in the middle's got a BlackBerry. Who's the most unhappiest? Well, probably the BlackBerry person. Here's a sign of just how far BlackBerry's star has fallen. The maker of one of the popular apps pulling the plug, citing a steady exodus of users gravitating instead to Android and the iPhone. Visual voicemail company Umail is ending development on its BlackBerry app. Umail CEO said in a blog post that this decision was bittersweet because BlackBerry got us our first million registered users and put us on the map as a company, but the times they are a-changing. A six-legged baby boy is struggling to survive at the National Institute of Child Health in Pakistan. The boy had a premature conjoined twin, which resulted in the extra limbs. Well, you know, it could happen to most of us. We suddenly wake up, find ourselves disoriented, wondering, hey, where are we? And possibly mistaking a light in the distance for something completely different. Really, usually no big deal. You shake it off, you wake up, or you move on. Can't happen, though, if you're a pilot on a transatlantic flight. This pilot took a look at Venus, thought it was another plane. He sent his plane into a dive, slamming passengers into the ceiling and back to the floor. They didn't like that. Anyway, up next, we're going to talk about this study about fluoridation failing to reduce cavities in New York City and nationally. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, as I mentioned, new research showing that fluoride chemicals added to public water supplies are not reducing tooth decay, as promoted and promised by government agencies. Dr. Bill Osmundson is a leading dentist in the fight against fluoride use. Bill has been on the program with me before. He's been practicing for 33 years and believes that fluoride is one of the 10 greatest public health blunders of the 20th century. This hour, we're going to talk about this because this is in the water, folks, all over the place. Bill, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. And how are you, George?
Good. it's fascinating to see this study. At least finally we're getting more data, data that you've known about, Bill, for years, but at least it's getting more into the mainstream. What's your reaction to this?
Well, it's good that we're getting more studies into the mainstream, and it's good that we're getting studies that are a little bit better, showing that fluoride is not finding benefit. But this is one of many studies that are showing that fluoridation in public water or the swallowing of fluoride, even putting it on the surface of the tooth, is just not reducing dental caries.
Bill, let's go back to the beginning. How long has it been since fluoride was in our drinking water, and how in the heck did this start?
Well, it started about in the 50s when they first started in Michigan. It was a theory based on some of the dark teeth from Colorado, where they seemed to have fewer cavities, and they decided that, well, this is because of the fluoride. It's also because in the same areas they had hard water with calcium and other minerals, but they felt it was the fluoride that was helping out reduce the caries, and so they started artificially putting it in other waters to, in the theory that it's going to reduce dental caries. There was more to it than that. There was.
Go ahead. Well, they spend millions of dollars pumping this stuff into our system, but no, I want you to finish that up.
Well, we were going through the war, you know, World War II, and they were making this atomic bomb, and part of the making of atomic bomb, they needed a lot of fluoride, so they had two choices. One, fluoride is very toxic, and they could make the atomic bomb in a hurry, raising the risk of collateral damage to the employees and everything, or they could make it slowly and make it in a safer environment. Because we were in a war, they opted to say, look, let's make this bomb in a hurry. Let's cut back on some of the safety precautions. Let's just get this bomb made. So they did. And in doing that, they kind of cooked some of the data, put some of the data into the Manhattan Project that was showing more harm. And they made the bomb. We stopped the war. But they never released the research that it was causing harm. Meanwhile, the public health people started pushing that fluoride. So it's really been a travesty of public health to be pushing this onto everybody.
Bill, were there payoffs along the line, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
Even today, there's plenty of payoffs for the dental office. I mean, I didn't used to think there was. I used to say, no, dentists aren't making a profit on this. But some of my friends pointed out to me very casually that, look, Bill, when we put fluoride varnish on people's teeth, we're making a boatload of money. And it's true. A dentist can make $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 of extra money, and they don't even have to do anything to the patient. They have an assistant or a hygienist that puts the fluoride varnish on the teeth. So the dentist can make a significant amount of money with the fluoride. And I think most dentists honestly think what their school has taught them, that it's a benefit. Unfortunately, it's not. There's a new study that came out of England where they did 3 years, three times a year, of fluoride varnish. Now, this is where you take it. It's painted on. It's glued onto the teeth. So it stays on the tooth at, you know, hundreds of times more concentrated than toothpaste. And after 3 years, three times a year, they found no benefit. And one of the better studies that we have, most studies are very, very poor, and if they don't show a benefit, they aren't published. But this one out of England was published. So it's not even beneficial painted on the teeth, glued on the teeth.
When I was in Michigan in my youth, Bill, my parents signed me up for this fluoridation treatment where they came to your school. So, I don't know who got the money for it, whether it was the health department or some individual dentist who sold the school district on this idea. But I remember having to go in for treatments, three, four, five of them, I don't know, and sit down for 25 minutes or so while this dentist sprayed this fluoride all over my teeth.
Yeah.
And, gosh, this was done in the late 50s, and I hated it. I hated every minute of it.
Well, you're right. And I've had patients who tell me later, now that I'm speaking up against fluoride, they'd say, well, remember when I came into your office and you put fluoride on my teeth? And I go, yeah, I remember that. Did you know that I walked out in the parking lot and vomited in the parking lot? And I said, no, I didn't know that. Well, I was embarrassed to even say anything to you, but I vomited. And I said, well, that now that looking back, that was probably the best thing you could have done is gotten it. You must have swallowed some, and it's good you got rid of it. So we have just been, it's a travesty of what we've done, and it's partly because it's not doing any good. Fluoridation, swallowing fluoride, doesn't seem to be giving us benefit. There's many studies that show that it's not. But the second thing is it's causing so much harm that it should scare the living daylights out of people.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. If it's not reducing tooth decay and it's hurting us, how's it hurting us? What's happening?
Well, my biggest concern, of course, as a dentist, I see dental fluorosis. But dental fluorosis, little white spots, little lines, streaks of white on the teeth, usually seen in the front teeth, but they can go all the way to the back. That's a sign of toxic fluoride intake. In other words, that person, when those teeth were developed, had too much fluoride. Well, people don't mind white teeth, so a little bit of white spots, they don't really fuss about that too much. But you need to remember that dental fluorosis is also throughout the entire body, and that's a sign of toxic overload of fluoride. But the teeth, well, they tend to crack a little bit more, but you know, that's not a big deal for a dentist because he just does more crowns. And so the cosmetic effects, well, that's not a really big deal either because we just do more fillings in it. But yes, it is a big deal. I'm joking with you. I'm being facetious. It is a big deal, but the biggest one is to the brain. You know, fluoride is more toxic than lead. It's a little less toxic than arsenic. Now, we wouldn't go around painting our children's teeth with lead or arsenic. They swallow it. We wouldn't be swallowing the lead and arsenic intentionally. We shouldn't be swallowing fluoride. We shouldn't be putting it on our teeth. The brain is the biggest concern to me. The latest research that has come out, and two researchers have been very, very firm on this, that we should not, that no level of fluoride is acceptable. Oh. In other words, we shouldn't be swallowing anything because it's reducing the IQ of every child in the population by about 6 to 10 IQ points.
That's just enough to push the scale, too. I bet, Bill, most people don't even know if their communities are or are not putting fluoride in their water system. I mean, one would guess they probably do because most of them are. But I don't think people know what's in their water supply.
You're absolutely right. The people don't know partly because you have to look at a map to find out exactly where that water system is sending the water to. For instance, in Beaverton, Oregon, I always told my patients, yes, at my office here, why we have fluoridated water. I've gone to this water district many times and talked to them and trying to get them to stop the fluoride in my water district. They're working on it. But then when I actually looked at the map, there's kind of a jig-jog, and right where my office is, there's no fluoridate in the water. We don't know who's getting it and who's not getting it. Even a quarter milligram of fluoride, that means just one glass of water, is something that the FDA says do not swallow.
Oh, boy. I have gone out of my way to get toothpaste that does not have fluoride in it. Originally, it was a little hard to find, but then I started finding some natural toothpastes at the stores. They're starting to come in now.
Yes.
And that's what I buy all the time. What about bottled water, Bill? Does that include fluoride? I got to tell you, I haven't even looked.
Yes, some of it does. Unfortunately, to the most vulnerable of our population, to infants and children, they use some fluoride in bottled water to give to infants, and that should not be happening. Mother's milk has no fluoride in most samples that have been taken, or a very, very low level, mean level of about 0.004, very, very small amount of fluoride. And so that's about 170 times less fluoride than if you were to make infant formula with a fluoridated water from the water system. So we don't want to give infants fluoride. That's critical because their blood-brain barrier has not developed. We're sending that fluoride to the brain, and it's not good. In fact, the fetus gets it from the mother. And so the mother should not be drinking the fluoridated water. In fact, one of the big concerns I have right now is the sperm and the egg prior to the conception. These are being affected. We know it happens in animals, and now we're beginning to see with our research that it really goes earlier. The next thing is that it persists for about three generations. We know it's a cumulative factor.
Yeah, it stays around. Bill, hold on. We're going to come back with you. We're going to take phone calls, questions, and stories. Fluoride use, what an unbelievable story. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest this hour, Bill Osmundson, as we talk about fluoride in our drinking water. Bill, would you give us your website, please?
The best website to go to is fluoridealert.org. Fluoridealert.org. And there's also another one with WashingtonSafeWater.com is a good one.
It appears that most children in the inner cities who seem to be getting a lot of fluoride are having worse teeth, more cavities than other kids.
Well, some studies show that, and some studies show that they're not. It all depends. In other words, our studies are such poor quality that you can find data to prove any side you want. But what we do know is that government employees are desperate to support their jobs on the public health side of things. So they will talk about how there's a crisis of decay in Boston, and there's a crisis of decay in Detroit, and all these different places. And you look at these cities and say, well, they've been fluoridated now for 60 years. For instance, Kentucky was given an award a few years ago for 50 years of fluoridation in Kentucky. Virtually everybody has been fluoridated in Kentucky that's on public water for 50 years. The American Dental Association gave them an award. But if you look at the data, the same year, they had the highest rate of tooth loss. In other words, people without any teeth. So we aren't seeing the benefit, and public health employees are pushing fluoride, telling how they need more funding and they need it because of all these problems. So inner city kids, they do have more problems than some, but in other studies it shows that they're not.
How much money do cities save if they don't fluoridate their water?
Well, it averages out at about $1 a day on using their data. But when they're including the cost of fluoridation, they only include the chemicals. They don't include the training, the equipment, the repairs on the equipment, and any of the side effects of medical side effects or dental side effects.
Well, and you say $1 a day, that's $1 a day a person, right?
Correct. $1 a day a person is about average of what it's costing for many cities. The smaller ones, a little more expensive. The larger ones, it's less cost.
Let's take some calls here if we can. Bill, let's go to Rick. Truck driving in Colorado, west of the Rockies. Rick, go ahead. Thank you.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
First of all, I want to say, George, I appreciate your show. I've been listening to you for about a decade now.
Thank you.
I appreciate all the advice. You've helped me out and other friends and stuff like that. So I definitely appreciate it. I've also gave a friend, I don't want to get off the subject, but I gave a friend that you guys' number and stuff because I know a couple weeks ago you guys had some things with the smart meters, and he was trying to get a hold of you, but he didn't know the number because he has a thing going on with that as well. But on the fluoride, I wanted to say, what is the alternative that people can do? Because I drink a lot of bottled water, and I'm just trying to see what's beneficial, and when I'm away from home, the most thing that I try to put the little filtration things on the water, and I'm trying to see, is that useful? Is that beneficial? Because I have noticed some of my nieces and nephews have more cavities, like you've been saying, and like I told the caller, what is the alternative, how we can detoxify ourselves from getting all these toxins that's pouring right back into our body? And the last thing is, I appreciate your guest for giving out this information. And does his website also give alternatives, which is how can we get it out of our body and other places that we can buy other alternatives that will be beneficial? I take my call off the air, and thank you guys for giving out this information.
Okay, I'll let you take a stab at some of these, Bill.
Okay, there are several questions and excellent questions. How do we get it out of our bodies is a good one. The half-life of fluoride in the body is about 20 years. So if we start reducing the fluoride intake from all sources, the primary sources are fluoridated water, and the second source is fluoride toothpaste. Those are the two big ones. But we also get a lot of it in foods and vegetables pesticides and post-harvest fumigants. It just goes on and on, medications, many different sources for fluoride. But the main one is water for most people. And bottled water, most of it does not have fluoride in it unless it says on the bottle that it does have fluoride in it. Reverse osmosis at home is another way of getting it on out, which is a special process. You have to put it in under your sink and plumb it in, and that will help get the fluoride on out. There are other units such as Athena and Kangen water and others that will actually are even better, but they're more expensive, and they then will adjust the pH back on up from the reverse osmosis water. So the bottled water, when you're traveling, you don't know what you're getting. Even some of the bottled water tastes terrible, but most of it is much better, and it's a reverse osmosis.
Would a good plumber, Bill, know how to install a reverse osmosis system?
Yes, absolutely. You don't even have to have a good plumber to do it. Most handymen can just do it very simply. The directions are simple. It hooks into the drain in the water and has a little faucet that'll come out the top, and then you get your water from the top. It has a fairly large tank underneath that'll fit underneath the sink. So I've put in several of them, and most people can put it in without any problem, but it does take a little bit of tools.
And I had also heard that, you know, fluoride and all this other stuff will go right through your skin through the shower. Is that true?
It will. I think our bodies, keep more of it out. That's not a major source of it. I think swallowing it is a bigger source of fluoride. But yes, some people even have problems when they take a shower that their bodies will develop kind of a rash or an itch on it because it is absorbed. If we put fluoride toothpaste, for instance, in our mouth and we leave it there for at high concentrations for a fair amount of time, it will cause apoptosis of the cells, in other words, cell death in our mouths. So I've had patients who their dermatologists have said, you have sores in the corners of your mouth, stop your fluoridated toothpaste, and that can reduce things. So, yeah, it is absorbed in gas from the air. In other words, fluoride gas, it can be breathed in and also through the skin.
Let's go to Allie in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Allie. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, George, and
sure
it's
thing.
Just a delight to hear you on the air, Bill, and speaking to all these people and letting them know about all the harm that's being done to our infants, our children, our elderly, and those that are most vulnerable with this toxic waste. And I'm happy to sit on the Washington Action for Safe Water Board with Dr. Osmussen, but what sure. My red flag was, I've been given the belief that fluoride was good, like everyone else out there probably listening has, and had it all my life. And then I read the statement that said, hydrofluoric acid, an industrial waste product recovered from the smokestack scrubbers during the production of phosphate fertilizers. That's what they put in our water.
That's
which
right.
Really kind of bothers me that that's where it comes from, is inside those smokestacks from the phosphate fertilizer industry. It's a toxic waste. Once it comes out of there, it's labeled as a hazardous product, loaded into the rail car, taken to the chemical company, treated or whatever, as a hazardous product.
With a skull with an X on it, right?
Yes, and poison. But once it reaches the water district and gets into the water, abracadabra, it's a health benefit.
It's not poison anymore. What do you think of that, Bill?
And so I want to make one other point and then ask Bill a question, or have Bill answer a question on the air. Government websites, if you really go search through them, you can find from the CDC, the FDA, this is a dangerous poison product. And so what can we do to stop it from happening? Talking to political people is almost like talking to, as Bill once said, cement walls. We've done it enough.
That's
we
right.
need to get the people moving to do something about it.
I would go directly to your water district and to your mayor and make it a local issue, not a national issue. That's the only way to get it done, Bill, I think. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you, but I think it needs to be all fronts, national and state and local. But it's easier for most people to just go to their water district and say, I choose not to have fluoride in my water. Please provide me water that does not have fluoride added to it. I do not give my consent to be fluoridated. I think it's a very powerful statement. I do not give my consent to be fluoridated. They should be listening to that, although most bureaucrats are listening to the federal government. They're just relying on somebody else. Allie, it's nice of you to call in, and Allie's working very hard in Washington State to stop the fluoridation. I'm very proud of what she's doing. Her comment on the waste product from the phosphate fertilizer industry, yes,
absolutely,
that's where it's
right.
Coming from. It saves them thousands and thousands of dollars per ton to be able to just dispose of it in the water districts rather than having it disposed of in a hazardous waste site. So
it's like making money on the hole from the donut, isn't it? In the old days, they would throw it away. Now they turn it into another product.
Exactly. Yeah, making money on the hole in the donut, except that there's nothing but air there. Anyway, and it's a problem for us. So that's a big concern of mine is the waste product that is put in, because it does. If you measure the blood lead level of children in the fluoridated communities, the lead level in their blood is higher in the fluoridated communities, and when you have a higher lead level, you absorb more of the fluoride. When you're in a naturally fluoridated area where the fluoride is naturally in the water, you have a lot of calcium and everything, and the fluoride is tied up and it's not absorbed as easily in the body because of the calcium. So the waste product from the phosphate fertilizer industry is just a crime.
Bill, who controls this in terms of in the water supply? At the state level or at the local level?
You've asked probably the key question in my mind over the last 5 years. Who is in control of this thing? And when you look at it from what Congress has said, Congress has prohibited the EPA from adding anything to the water to treat people. Well, fluoride, the only purpose for adding fluoride to the water is to treat people. So the EPA is prohibited from doing that. Therefore, that means they don't regulate it as far as the addition.
All right.
The Congress has said that the FDA is to be responsible for substances that are intended to prevent or cure disease because they're a drug. And so therefore, the FDA, Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, are the ones that are responsible for it. So the key people in my mind are the people with jurisdiction is the FDA. However, the courts have historically said, no, it can't really be a drug. Well, it is a drug, but it can't really be a drug. And so they've protected the public health government officials, and it's, in my mind, it is an FDA situation. However, to get around all those things, what people have done in the past is they have gotten the voters to be involved with voting it in so that you're voting the illegal drug onto each other. And that's why, George, I think your point of going to the locally has the best chance of getting it out as soon as possible is going locally to your water district and keep saying, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. And you got to be persistent to that.
That's right. Go to your council meetings. Go to your aldermen and do whatever you have to do. Let's go to Joe in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Go ahead, Joe, while we've got some time here. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be here. And
thank you,
I'll
Joe.
Tell you, you're touching some really touchy subjects for me of 50 years being in Kentucky that we've been fluoridated. And, of course, the lady that was just on earlier touched on, the government disposal of this material. It's obviously greed and evil that sits behind this product. And I feel like we need to attack where it comes from to stop it. I do security for a living, and I do the Hardin County Water District number 2 here that provides water for the entire area. Mercury contamination is also a bad thing in Kentucky.
That's right.
So, this is ridiculous. We're poisoning our children, and my wife is a phlebotomist. the blood that they have to do testing on today. They're very, like I said, I'm learning a lot here. And this is a drastic toxin that needs to be prevented.
Well, Joe, you bring a really good point, and you hit me right between the eyes again, because one of the big sources of mercury in the human body is the black mercury fillings in people's mouths that should have been outlawed 20 years ago, and they're still being put into people's mouths. They should not be there. That's a huge source. The mercury, we can even see it with special equipment. We can see the mercury vapor coming off every time people drink something hot or warm or brush their teeth or get their teeth cleaned. This mercury is coming off. Now, it's true that the coal burning has huge amounts of mercury, but not all of that is just directly in the mouth of a person. So I'm very concerned about the mercury, but tonight's on fluoride, and fluoride in Kentucky is just a shame. It's not doing any good.
Not at all. Karen is in Ashland, Oregon. Go ahead, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for explaining those white spots on my teeth. is there a way that we can rectify the fluoridosis on our teeth, and then, you know, of course, more importantly, in our bones and our brain? And then I had a second question as well. I didn't quite understand that. I think I heard you say that fluoride was used in the process of making hydrogen bombs, and that they recognized at that point that it was a dangerous substance. So how did we go from there to here? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
Few moments to go here, Bill. Go ahead.
Okay, Karen, how do you treat dental fluorosis? There are different ways of doing it. You can try putting a lot of calcium. MI paste is one of them that is used to treat the teeth a bit, to try to recalcify those areas, because the dental fluorosis areas does not have as much calcium, and it's a weaker area of the tooth. And so that's one way of doing it. But fillings we sometimes do, veneers we sometimes do. I often will treat the fluorosis with veneers. It's costly, it's expensive, and it has to be redone every so often. The other thing was regarding nuclear bombs. Well, my point on the nuclear bomb is that we needed to make it in a hurry, and fluoride is used to enrich uranium. Fluoride is a wonderful element. It's extremely powerful, and that's how one of the ways that they helped to enrich uranium to make the atomic bomb. And that's why with some of the research, the earliest research was hidden in the Manhattan Project, and it was kind of you could call it a cover-up, but it was for theoretically a good reason.
Boy, I would love for city councils to begin getting calls from people, or people who go down for their weekly or monthly meeting, and begin to bring this up as an issue. What kind of information can they garner, can they grab from the FloridaAlert.org website, so they can go to these meetings with some intelligence, Bill?
Well, FloridaAlert.org, that will help them find information, a tremendous amount of science, getting some coaching on what subjects to bring up to their water district. One of the things that I'm working on with several water districts right now and in several states is to simply provide a warning on the water bill saying that this water should not be used to make infant formula. We need to protect our babies. That's where I think some of our biggest problems are. And if the water districts would simply notify people not to use it for infants, that would be a big start.
That's a great idea. Bill, thank you so much. Great subject. Very important. Back with more Are We Alone? We'll be back.